How the Bioterrorism Era Began. Commentary. Bill Clinton begins the phony era of pandemics and bioterrorism. In November 1997, U.S. Secretary of Defense William Cohen held up a 5-pound bag of Domino sugar in front of an army of cameras and told the world that if the bag contained anthrax, it could wipe out NYC or Washington, D.C. That was not true, but it provided a fitting justification for the start of the DoD's biodefense vaccine program, beginning with mandatory anthrax vaccinations for soldiers in March 1998. According to an NBC cover story, in April 1998, President Bill Clinton read a Richard Preston novel, The Cobra Event, about a biological attack on the U.S. using a lethal virus that spreads like the common cold. It scared the bejesus out of him, recalls Kenneth Bernard, a now-retired U.S. Public Health Service official who was then representing the U.S. in Geneva at the World Health Organization. The USG invested in a new smallpox vaccine, ACAM 2000, based on the older Dryvax vaccine. The fact that it caused high rates of myocarditis has been ignored. And the biodefense era began, supplying handsome contracts to those who promised remedies in the new Wild West of biowarfare and infectious disease. Many of those who got the contracts had friends in high places, like FOB Ronald Perelman, who made a killing on a smallpox remedy that was eventually used as a monkeypox drug. Did it work? Who knows? The 21st century ushered in a well-coordinated push to generate fear about 1. A repeat of the 1918 flu pandemic, 2. Jumps of deadly viruses from animals to humans, and 3. Biologic warfare threats. The 2002-3 SARS outbreak and the avian influenza outbreak, both beginning shortly after the anthrax letters, were hyped to the max to generate fear of pandemics and biological warfare. How many people did these infectious diseases kill in the United States and around the world? 1. The anthrax letters caused 5 human deaths, all in the United States. 2. SARS-1 caused under 800 deaths around the world. There were 27 U.S. cases designated as SARS-1 and not a single U.S. death. 3. Avian flu is said to have caused 463 deaths total in the entire world over the past 20 years, according to the WHO. Only 2 Americans have been identified as having an illness associated with avian flu, and both were very minor. Not a single American has died from avian flu. The recent case of conjunctivitis is recovering. The CDC and mainstream media claim that avian flu has killed over 100 million chickens. It has not. USDA rules have forced growers to cull over 100 million chickens. When one chicken has a positive PCR test for bird flu, every chicken in the chicken house must be killed. Was that test even accurate? But expansive claims like these are what gets the public going and putting up with incursions on their freedoms. So, on the basis of a bioterrorism performance using letters containing anthrax spores sent to Congress and the media that were made in a lab, and 2 relatively minor zoonotic diseases that failed to kill a single American, we Americans were led by the nose into the era of biodefense. In 2009, the pandemic preparedness/biosecurity agenda really took off with an expensive bang. The WHO's Director General Margaret Chan declared a pandemic phase level 6 for a swine flu outbreak that was milder than a normal influenza outbreak, triggering tens of billions of dollars in sleeper contracts that the WHO had initiated between national governments and vaccine manufacturers. The contracts guaranteed that nations would buy millions or hundreds of millions of doses of vaccines for any future level 6 pandemic that a WHO director general declared. The contracts did not say that the definition of a level 6 pandemic could be changed so that any new virus at all could meet the definition. But that is what happened. The definition of a level 6 pandemic was changed so that it was meaningless, and a few weeks later Director General Margaret Chan declared a level 6 pandemic. The contracts were triggered, and on the order of a billion doses of H1N1 flu vaccines were administered. Grandfathered in. liability-free. Some caused serious side effects, especially the European Pandemrix brand made by GSK. Regulators identified very serious problems early and simply covered them up. Problems like being associated with 10 times higher rates of serious adverse events than other H1N1 vaccines. Drugs were also ushered in without a license. Here is some archived information on the drugs and other products given EUAs for the mild 2009 swine flu. Having wrought great harm in 2009, the WHO bounced to another debacle with West Africa's Ebola pandemic of 2014. Below I have excerpted from a Royal Society opinion piece, but there are many others that provided strong criticisms of the WHO response, including from some of the WHO's strongest supporters. It seems that really bad mistakes can lead to calls for reform and a bigger budget. We've seen Congress solve problems this way all the time. Then those reform efforts can be used to move an organization in the new desired direction. In this case, the WHO was maneuvered in the biodefense direction. Reading the article below, it appears that the WHO is an inept, disorganized bureaucracy that has a large stable of authors to write policy briefs, press releases, and has other employees who put on conferences. But the WHO has little understanding of actual epidemics and does not like to dirty its hands tending to them on the ground. What did the UK Royal Society publish about the WHO's response to West Africa's Ebola pandemic? https://royalsocietypublishing.org/doi/full/10.1098/rstb.2016.0307. Extract. However, after the initial errors of downplaying the outbreak, the WHO did maintain continued activity in tackling Ebola. The WHO documents its role in training healthcare workers and burial teams in infection control, community engagement activities, and providing epidemiological data. Furthermore, the organization published numerous technical guidance documents, hosted a series of meetings on vaccine options, developed diagnostic tools, and expanded laboratory services. Yet none of these activities provided direct patient care, strategic managerial oversight, or the infection control that the outbreak response needed. Ultimately, due to a vacuum of international leadership in the operational response, the patient care, infection control, and management were left to others, including Médecins Sans Frontières, a new UN body, and even the domestic and international militaries. All reviews attribute some blame to the World Health Organization for its delay to take action and for a lack of an operational response in the outbreak. However, while the WHO made some pivotal mistakes, as it itself admits, the outbreak exposed tensions between the normative and operational roles of the WHO, and furthermore between what the WHO is able to do and what the global community expects the WHO to do. The WHO admitted, "The initial response was slow and insufficient. We were not aggressive in alerting the world, our surge capacity was limited, we did not work effectively in coordination with other partners, there were shortcomings in risk communication, and there was confusion of role and responsibilities at the three levels of the organization." Despite the launch of a WHO roadmap in August 2014 strategizing the end of the epidemic within 6 to 9 months, a coordinated international response with WHO at the helm failed to materialize, with the outbreak rapidly developing into a humanitarian emergency. So the WHO has been failing upward with every global infectious disease crisis for at least the past 20 years, well before COVID. What does the organization offer us? Apart from providing a hook for globalists to gain more power, control, and wealth, the WHO offers nothing to the citizens of developed nations. It does provide some benefits to developing nations, but those benefits could probably be achieved at a much lower cost, and with preferable local decision-making and control, through another organization or through health ministries. As Dr. Inoue has said and written, it is time for us to exit the WHO. Originally published on the author's Substack, reposted from the Brownstone Institute.